so taking a pill that's got a progestin in it that actually lowers testosterone is going to help with those symptoms. But that's what I was saying before about you need to be on the right one. It is actually going to lower them. So just if you are on one and you don't think it's helping, then it could be that you're actually on not a great one, or it's actually making things worse. And I would say, like with our PCOS protocol, is like whenever I do, we do kind of like a check on what they're on. I would say probably 40% of the time they're on one that's actually making symptoms worse. And it's just because their like doctors just hasn't really like had the time to really think about what they're prescribing. They might just prescribe one that is funded for them or something else, but hasn't really. And maybe they're worried about like blood clotting or other things, but it then hasn't gone through and thought, hey, what, this person also has PCOS, so I need to also take that into consideration. There's lots of things to think about. So it's just a good idea to go back to them and ask, okay, is this pill going to help my PCOS symptoms? There's also one type of pill that we often get our PCOS protocolers to ask about if they've got hirsutism, because that can improve hirsutism by, I think it's 60%, the research shows. So it's just, it's just worthwhile asking that question and checking that you're on the right one. But if it is, it can be really, really helpful, and especially really helpful while, again, the pill is not the only thing that can improve those symptoms, but it can be really helpful in the meantime while you're working on the underlying like PCOS drivers and what's causing that acne and what's causing the hirsutism, you know, for at least like 6 months or so to get that under control. And then if you really want to come off it, come off it then. Hi, I'm Claire Goodwin, and this is the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. I have PCOS too, and I know how hard it can be to get the help you need. So I bring together my expertise as a registered nutritionist and exercise scientist, together with other experts I trust and people with real-life lived experience of PCOS, to help you get the information you need to make a real difference to your symptoms. Now, if you've been struggling with PCOS, working with us might just be the game changer you've been looking for. You see, PCOS is a complex hormonal disorder that can affect everything from your menstrual cycle to your fertility to your mental health. And while medication can be helpful in managing some of the symptoms of PCOS, it's often not enough on its own. That's where a lifestyle change comes in. We take a holistic approach to PCOS, looking at everything from your diet to your stress levels to your sleep habits, and create a personalized plan that works for you. We'll help you make lifestyle changes that can reduce your symptoms, improve your fertility, and boost your overall well-being. Whether you're struggling with weight gain, acne, or mood swings, we'll work with you to develop a plan that's tailored to your unique needs and goals. And the best part? We'll be with you every step of the way, providing support, accountability, and guidance as you navigate your PCOS journey. We have both our fully supported 12-week program, the PCOS Protocol, or you can book one-on-one appointments with myself, Claire, or one of our other qualified nutritionists. Head to thepcosnutritionist.com to either sign up for the PCOS Protocol or to book a one-on-one appointment. The links are in the show notes. So today we're going to be talking all about hormonal birth control, and I'm going to call it the pill throughout because it's just easier. But when I'm talking about the pill, I also mean any kind of hormonal birth control. So that could be the like IUD, like the Mirena, or the Skylena. I don't know why they all are Enas, but anyway, that's what they've termed them. Or it could be the almond plant, or it could be the Depo-Provera injection. Basically anything that's got hormones in it is what I'll be referring to today, but I'll probably just call it the pill because it's a bit easier. So what we're going to be talking about is that many of you will have heard one side or the other. You've either been told by your doctor that you have to go on the pill for PCOS, and I see this more and more commonly being told to people with PCOS. Not just, hey, the pill will be a really good idea for your symptoms, but you must go on the pill, and you almost have to justify why you don't want to, if you do, in fact, don't want to. But on the other hand, we also hear from some natural health practitioners or Instagram influencers that the pill is the worst possible thing you could do to your body, when actually the truth is somewhere in the middle. There are some really great benefits of hormonal birth control. There are really some really big downsides to it as well. And so it really depends on what your priorities are, whether it's going to work for you.
Yeah, I've definitely been on both sides of those, experiencing the doctors telling me you must go on the pill and seeing things on Instagram and being like, oh no, maybe I should come off, and then not knowing what's right, what's wrong. But what is hormonal contraception?
Yeah, really good question. And firstly, welcome Annabelle. Annabelle's joining me today in the podcast. So Annabelle's in our team here at the PCOS Nutritionist and is going to be playing along as, well, it's actually not really playing along. It's having a conversation about, as you said, what you've experienced, and especially from someone who's not come from like a health background. Mm-hmm. So this is, yeah. So firstly, what is hormonal birth control? How does it work? Well, as I said before, it's anything that contains hormones. And so it contains synthetic forms of your hormones. So you can get either what's called combined hormonal birth control, where it contains a synthetic estrogen and also a synthetic progesterone. Normally it's called ethinyl estradiol is the synthetic estrogen, and then the progestin varies wildly. There's like tens, if not hundreds, of different progestins that are the synthetic progesterone, and they all have different impacts. So especially when it comes to lowering testosterone, and that's what can be really helpful for PCOS symptoms. But some progestins, they actually increase testosterone, and some decrease testosterone. So that's the other thing about PCOS, is that if you are wanting to go on it to improve symptoms like acne or facial and body hair growth, which is called hirsutism, or hair loss, those testosterone symptoms, then you really want to make sure that you're on the right one, that it's actually going to reduce that, because actually a lot of them don't. A lot of them actually increase testosterone, and then also a lot of them are just neutral. They're not going to increase, but they're also not really going to make it better. So you can have a hormonal birth control that's got both. That would be what's called a combined hormonal birth control. And then you can have what's called progestin only. So it doesn't have that ethinyl estradiol. It's just got the progestin. So examples of this would be the Mirena IUD, or the Kylena or Skylena, the Implanon implant, the mini pill is also a progestin only pill. So these are also like quite common and often used for specifically some symptoms, maybe where you're at risk of like blood clotting, or where it's been shown to be really effective for your condition, like the Mirena and endometriosis. So there's different forms. But the way that they work is and this is why they were formed to be a contraceptive, is to stop your body from ovulating. That is generally the way they work. So what they're going to do is they're going to block the receptors in your brain, so that your brain doesn't receive the messages to increase estrogen, which they would then grow the little baby egg or follicle, so your baby can ovulate. Sorry, not your baby, your body can ovulate, and then that would then lead to an egg, which could then be fertilized by sperm, which would then lead to a fertilized embryo and a baby, a pregnancy, right? So that's the way that they work, is by stopping that follicle from developing right from the start, which means that you can't ovulate. The other way it can work as well is by like thickening your cervical fluid, which means that sperm kind of can't penetrate, and a few other mechanisms. The other one can be reducing your uterine lining, the lining of your uterus, so that actually there's nowhere for the little baby egg to implant if it is fertilized. So those are kind of the contraceptive ways that it works, and that's regardless of whether you're using it for contraceptive purposes or for for your acne, it's still going to have those effects. So it's still going to stop you from ovulating. There are a few exceptions to that. So especially some of the progestin only, like the Mirena and the Kylena, they can allow you to ovulate if you've had them in for quite a while. So towards the end of the life of those, they can allow you to ovulate. They're also working as a contraceptive through those other means of like thickening your cervical fluid and reducing your endometrial lining. So they're still working as a contraceptive, but they may allow you to ovulate. But as a general rule, I think it's just good to think about it, that high probability is if you're on hormonal birth control, especially if it's anything combined, then you will not be ovulating. That's how it works as a contraceptive. Does that make sense?
So there's, because I know that with the pills, there's different ones, right? There's like the combined and then mini.
Yes.
And the mini one is the one that you always take, or?
Yeah, the mini is one that you've got to be quite careful about, like taking it at the like really specific time of day. And that's because it is the progestin only. It doesn't have the ethinoestradiol, which will stop your body from like producing your own estrogen and then for growing that egg. So you do have to be a little bit more careful with that one about taking it at the right time. It's probably, I actually don't know the stats, but I think it is slightly less effective than the combined pill just because of the risk of like you not taking it at exactly the same time each day, which, I mean, for most of us, like, just wouldn't happen. Yeah. So it's no wonder.
Yeah. And then with the combined pill, you have that break, which is when you potentially have a bleed. What is that bleed?
Like? Yeah, that's a really good question as well. So you have the, so what happens when you're taking the pills? As I said, it's like, it's blocking those estrogen receptors, and so your body's not getting that message that it needs to grow that baby egg. And then when you take the sugar pills, or you just stop taking it, most people just, I guess they just wouldn't take those sugar pills, your body is not getting that exposure to that synthetic progestin and estrogen, and therefore it will be like, because it, previously it's also had the progestin there, so it's been blocking that progesterone receptor in your brain, so it thinks it's got progesterone there. And so when you stop taking it, it's like, I thought I had progesterone. And one of the things about that having progesterone does is that it stops your body from shedding that lining. And so when you take that away, it then is like, there is no progesterone here. Oh, okay, right, it's time to get a period then. So what's happening is, when people say you're getting a fake period, that's not true. You're still shedding that lining like you would. It's not like suddenly some arteries exploded and you're actually like getting blood. It's still the same thing. It's still that endometrial lining being shed. What they're trying to say is that it's not the result of you ovulating, because that is what a period would normally result from, is when your body ovulates. It then realizes that you're not pregnant, and then it's like, oh, well, that was useless. And then it's like, okay, I'm gonna just burn down this little nest that I've created, which is your uterine lining, and then we're gonna have to start again all over again next month to grow a new egg. It's kind of like if you imagine two birds in a nest that are like getting ready to lay their eggs. They go up and, you know, like they form their nest, and then they sit on there, and then like no egg comes, and they're like, well, that was a waste of time. So it like basically destroys the nest and then goes out and like builds a new nest and comes back and like tries to lay its eggs. That's kind of what our body's doing when we get a period. It's like, oh, stupid human, didn't get pregnant, like we're just gonna burn this house down and start all over again. So that is what's happening when you ovulate and get a period. Whereas when you're on birth, when you're taking hormones, it's more that the receptor's being blocked, and then we take that away, and that's when it gets the message to bleed, to shed that lining. So it's still the same thing. It's just that it's a different trigger for that to happen.
Yeah, no, that's such a good way to explain it and understand it. What are the benefits and the downfalls, and like what's the benefits of taking hormonal contraceptive?
Yeah, so that's what we're going to be talking about today. So I think the first thing to start with is, well, really one of the main benefits is, well, the whole reason the pill was created was for contraception, right? Like, and it is a really effective contraception. As I said, there's different effectiveness, depends on what you take. The most effective would be like the implant, some of the implants, like and the reason for that is that we just remove out all kind of human error. So when you have like the arm implant or the IUD, then it just means it's a lot more, a lot less likely that you're going to forget to take your pill. Mm-hmm. And so therefore that's why they're higher. Same thing, like the progestin only can be quite effective, but there is some human error in that. You have to be so careful about when you take it. And also too, the more effective would be things like the combined pill, but generally very effective. Like, you can look up the effectiveness rates, but generally there will be around about 98%, which means that for every 100 people that take that pill and are also sexually active and are sexually active around ovulation, because that's a time when you actually can get pregnant, then 2 people out of 100 will get pregnant. Right, so it's still, there's still a risk, it's still not foolproof, but it is pretty good. So it's, but interestingly, it's not the most effective form of contraception, and we'll talk about this in the, like, so actually we can talk about that now. So actually, one of the probably the most effective, by the stats, is something called the copper IUD, and this is again like the Mirena, so it's inserted into your uterus. But instead of having the progestin in there, it doesn't have any hormones. Instead, it releases copper. And one of the way that it works is that it actually cuts off the tails of the sperm. Mm. And so it stops them from, the copper cuts off the tails of the sperm, so the sperms can't swim, they can't get up to meet the egg, and therefore you can't get pregnant. So it's quite wild.
Yeah, it's wild.
Really wild. But actually the most effective form, and really interestingly, this is the form that is actually the most effective emergency contraception. Mm-hmm. So the way that emergency contraception works, this is a little bit of a side tangent, but I think it's really interesting, is that the Plan B pill, the way that works is by like delaying ovulation. So if you have unprotected sex and you're worried that you're going to get pregnant, and you then take the Plan B, the only way it works is by delaying ovulation. So if you are ovulating at that time, Plan B can't actually delay ovulation because the egg is already in the process of being released. So and also too, it Plan B, the emergency contraceptive pill, whatever they call it in your country, that also can be ineffective for people at a higher body weight because of the way that the amount of like hormones in it and needing to delay ovulation. So if that's the case for you, you're at a higher body weight, or you think you're like very close to ovulating and you really need an emergency contraceptive, then you can actually get the copper coil implanted, copper IUD implanted, and that is the most effective form of emergency contraception. So if that's the case for anyone, especially if you're in the US and you're in a state that is making it very hard around abortion laws or to get emergency contraception, then that is a really good alternative, because as well, you could get that put in for without, you know, just hey, I want to get a permanent form of contraception put in. No one has to know that you think that you might have had unprotected sex around that time. It can just be the simple conversation with your healthcare provider, I want to get the copper coil. So that's the most effective form of contraception. There's also there are other non-hormonal forms of contraception that are also really effective. So fertility awareness method gets a bad rap because people don't really understand it, but actually this is studies have proved that it is as effective, if not more effective, than the combined pill, if done correctly. Most people get it incorrect though, and they think they just download an app that where they put in their days of their period, and there are a few apps out there still that are doing this where they'll like predict when you're ovulating, which is really dangerous if you're using it for contraception. That only works about 60% of the time, so it's a very fast track way to an unwanted pregnancy. But if you actually use your what's called the symptothermal method of fertility awareness, that's using your body temperature and your symptoms, your signs and symptoms that your body is ovulating, and that is the cervical fluid production, then it is as effective, if not more effective, than the pill. So that's why I'm just saying it now, is that the pill and hormone birth control is really effective for contraception, but it's not the only thing.
And is that with the thermometer testing your temperature?
Yeah, so that's the thermo part of symptothermal. So when you take your thermometer, when you take your temperature, it can tell you when that your body has ovulated if you get a rise in temperature. And you do have to understand the rules around this and how to know this.
It's quite strict with sleep and stuff, isn't it, right?
It can be. I think that it really depends on, I see for some people are more sensitive than others, but it's really about getting to know your body. But so yeah, temperature can definitely tell you, yes, absolutely, you have ovulated. Cervical fluid can tell you are really fertile now, and this is the time where you need to be really careful And using another, like, either abstaining or using another barrier method like a diaphragm or condoms around that time. And then once you've ovulated, then yes, there's no chance that you can get pregnant, so you don't have to worry about protection there. So that would be, so natural cycles would be the one that you've probably heard of, mm-hmm. which can uses that temperature, and that can tell you, yes, now you have ovulated. For people with PCOS, if you have long cycles, it definitely can still work, but that's where you'd probably want to use both the symptoms, because it could be 40 days until you ovulate, right? But during that time, you're not fertile during that whole time. You're only fertile during, like, the times when your body is, like, really leading up to ovulation. And so that's where using the cervical fluid to tell you when you're fertile could be really helpful. So that is, yeah, but you just need to commit to learning about it, and which doesn't take much time, but you just need to follow the rules and learn, not just download an app, put your periods in, and expect then it's going to be able to work out when you're ovulating, because that, it just can't do that.
And then for people with PCOS, because I have PCOS myself, and whenever I've been to the doctors, they have always told me to go on the pill, but my reason behind it was acne. So when I first went, I was like, I need to get this to kind of like help with my skin. I felt like it was my last option. I'd been on like antibiotics for months on end, and it was just, nothing was helping, and it helped my skin so much, and I'm still on it now, and I don't know, I don't feel like I'm at a phase where I'm like ready to come off it yet. So the pill for people with PCOS can be like super beneficial as well, for different reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. And these are the other benefits, and that's what we were saying, like, that it's neither good nor bad, it just depends on what your priorities are. So some of the other benefits is exactly what you're saying, that it can reduce your testosterone, which can then reduce your PCOS symptoms. So testosterone is the cause of PCOS acne, also facial and body hair growth, and hair loss in the crown of your head, right? That's testosterone that's causing that. And so what's happening is, like, for example, the testosterone's getting into your sebum glands and your skin and causing them to overproduce oil, which then leads to acne. And so taking a pill that's got a progestin in it that actually lowers testosterone is going to help with those symptoms. But that's what I was saying before about, you need to be on the right one that is actually going to lower them. So just, if you are on one and you don't think it's helping, then it could be that you're actually on not a great one, or it's actually making things worse. And I would say, like, with our PCOS protocol is, like, whenever I do, we do kind of like a check on what they're on. I would say probably 40% of the time they're on one that's actually making symptoms worse. And it's just because their, like, doctors just hasn't really, like, had the time to really think about what they're prescribing. They might just prescribe one that is funded for them or something else, but hasn't really, and maybe they're worried about, like, blood clotting or other things, but then hasn't gone through and thought, hey, what, this person also has PCOS, we need to also take that into consideration. There's lots of things to think about. So it's just a good idea to go back to them and ask, okay, is this pill going to help my PCOS symptoms? Or especially if it's not, especially if you're like, I'm still getting acne. There's also one type of pill that we often get our PCOS protocol is to ask about if they've got hirsutism, because that can improve hirsutism by, I think it's 60%, the research shows. So it's just, it's just worthwhile asking that question and checking that you're on the right one. But if it is, it can be really, really helpful, and especially really helpful while, again, the pill is not the only thing that can improve those symptoms, but it can be really helpful in the meantime while you're working on the underlying, like, PCOS drivers and what's causing that acne and what's causing the hirsutism, you know, for at least like 6 months or so to get that under control. And then if you really want to come off it then. If you're like, hey, it's not meeting the other priorities that I've got. So, you know, my other priority would, you know, might, for example, be I'm an athlete. I want to, utilize my natural hormone production as a performance enhancer. Then, okay, but I also have these symptoms that I want to get under control. Well, okay, we'll do that for 6 months and then I'll come off it. So that's the other, you know, another really, really great benefit of a pill is that it can absolutely help with PCOS symptoms while you're taking it. It doesn't, though, long term, right? So as soon as you come off that, if you haven't also worked on why your body's overproducing testosterone, then acne is going to be as bad, if not worse, when you come off it. And I think that that's, most people are like, when they understand that, they're like, okay, cool, I get it. But so much of what we get told is that the pill is going to like fix our symptoms or especially regulate our cycle. And that's what we get told. And I think this is a really, that whole sentence needs a rebrand because that's not actually true. Like it's, so a cycle, as I said before, is the reason that people would normally get a period is that they ovulate and then their body realizes they're not pregnant and then it will then shed that lining. Whereas when we're taking the hormonal birth control, we're getting this artificial hormone there that's blocking that receptor that's pretending that everything's kind of going right. And then when we take that away, it's like, oh, we're not producing any progesterone. Okay, well, we'll shed the lining now. So it's not actually fixing anything. The problem, if you previously weren't getting a period, like you didn't have one in 6 months, it was because you weren't ovulating and therefore you weren't getting that trigger then to shed that lining. And so because the pill stops you from ovulating, it's actually not fixing that problem. So, but it's really helpful again in the meantime for getting a regular bleed and shedding that lining. But also the other thing with being on the pill is that you don't have to get a bleed. Recently in the last couple of years, they've come out with a sort of consensus that you can safely combine your pill packs and just not get a bleed if you don't want to. And that's one of the other really great benefits of the pill is that you can choose when to bleed. So if you don't want to get a period when you're on holiday or when you're getting married or something else, then you can choose not to have a period. Then you can just combine your pill packs. And because the way that the pill works by stopping you from ovulating is that that's actually quite safe to do because you're not getting a buildup of that uterine lining because you're not getting the estrogen to actually do that building. And so therefore it's relatively safe to do that. They have determined. So that is another really, really good benefit of that. Another really good benefit is that it can really help with things like endometriosis pain, especially, as I said before, the Mirena is a really popular hormonal birth control for people with endometriosis. And again, one of the reasons is because estrogen can be really inflammatory for endometriosis. So endometriosis tissue that's exposed to estrogen can cause some of the pain. And so by not producing estrogen and not like ovulating, that can actually be really helpful for a lot of people with endometriosis. So yeah, there's lots and lots of benefits of the pill for different people, and again depending on your priorities. The one thing that we probably haven't talked about is one of the main reasons in PCOS about why they might want you to be on the pill, like you said, is that if you're not getting a period. And so if you are not on hormonal birth control and you're not getting a period, then your body is just in a constant state of trying to ovulate. So in a person where they're getting a period every like 28 to 30 days, what's happening in their body is for about 14 of those days their body is raising estrogen to grow that little egg and then be able to ovulate. And then once it's ovulated, then your body will produce progesterone. And then, as I said before, if you're then not pregnant, the progesterone will drop off and then that's when you'll get a bleed. So for about 14 days, your body's producing estrogen. And then for about 14 days, it's producing progesterone as well. And so this kind of provides like a bit of a yin and yang, a like two halves to the whole that you're... and it is a really beautiful orchestra of hormones that are working there in sync. But if you're not getting a period for 6 months, what that means is that you're never quite getting to that ovulation. So actually you're just stuck in this kind of estrogen phase for 6 months. And what happens there is that you're not getting any progesterone to kind of counteract all that estrogen. And so you're just getting this constant estrogen exposure, which can lead to thickening of the endometrial lining. So you get quite thickened lining. And that is what they're mostly worried about, is that then that can put you at greater risk of endometrial cancer. So if you are hearing from your doctor that you have to go on the pill or you need to go on the pill if you've got PCOS because it reduces your risk of endometrial cancer, that's what they're saying, is if you're not getting a bleed and your body's exposed to all this estrogen with no counteracting progesterone, you're probably going to get a thickened uterine lining and therefore you're going to be at greater risk of endometrial cancer. So that is, that's one part. The other part when it comes to the cancer is, have you ever heard of them saying that the pill was really helpful for ovarian cancer? You heard?
I don't think so.
I don't know how common this is being told or is known, but the research does show that the pill can, or being on hormonal birth control, can reduce your risk of ovarian cancer. Mm-hmm. And ovarian cancer is like, it's a really deadly form because there's virtually no symptoms. Or actually, one of the main symptoms is a symptom that would often be your doctor wouldn't really take seriously anyway, and that is bloating. Right, so that's one of the common symptoms. But you think about how many people have bloating. I know that in our in PCOS, the research says that it's 70% of people report bloating as a symptom. Well, not as a symptom, but just as something that they deal with. Yeah. So how do you know that it's like ovarian cancer, or I just ate, you know, like if I just ate too much onion and garlic, which is like really causing, you know, if that's quite triggering for your bloating. Mm. So that's, so the research shows that yes, it can reduce your risk of ovarian cancer. But this is just by not ovulating. So again, the pill's not the only thing that can stop you from ovulating. I mean, if you've got PCOS and you're not ovulating for 6 months, and that could be helpful. If you get pregnant and you're not ovulating for 9 months, or potentially 18 months if you're breastfeeding as well, then that can reduce your risk. And the reason they know this is because they've looked at nuns and seen that there is a higher risk of ovarian cancer within nuns. And generally, nuns have not been on any hormonal birth control in their life, and also not had any pregnancies. And so they've just had their entire life of ovulating.
Mm-hmm.
So what can reduce your risk of ovarian cancer is not ovulating for about 5 years, I think is the stat. You'll have to look that up and make sure that I'm correct there, but even just not ovulating for 5 years can be helpful for reducing your risk of ovarian cancer. So if you have, you know, two or three pregnancies and therefore you're not ovulating during that pregnancy time, and you're breastfeeding, you're not ovulating again. Generally, if you're exclusively breastfeeding, most people don't ovulate, then that would be enough. Or if you've been on hormonal birth control any time in your life, so say it's in your like early 20s, you're on there for 5 years, again, that could probably be enough to reduce your risk of ovarian cancer. So it doesn't mean that you have to stay on there for your lifetime to reduce that risk of ovarian cancer. Yeah, so that's one. So the other thing, sorry, it's just me like bleating on here, but the other one about the endometrial cancer, I think that it's really important to talk more about. So because what I'm going to talk about in a minute is that one of the downsides of hormonal birth control is that it can actually increase your risk of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. So we've got these kind of like, again, the priorities part. And so with the endometrial cancer is probably the fifth most common cancer for females. It's also called uterine cancer. And so what I'll talk about in a minute is just basically like how common that is compared to breast cancer, because you might be hearing from your doctor, well, you need to go on to reduce your risk of endometrial cancer. But again, it's not the only way to get you back ovulating. If we get you back ovulating and you're shedding that lining and you're not getting a thickening of the lining, then actually the risk is probably a lot less. They don't actually know exactly why people with PCOS have an increased risk of endometrial cancer. They're pretty sure it's that endometrial thickening, but it could also be because 70% of us, or up to 85% of us, have insulin resistance, which is the like precursor to prediabetes and type 2 diabetes, and we know that that is a risk factor for all cancers. So that's could be part of it. And it can also thicken that lining. So having lots of insulin can also thicken that lining as well. And the other thing is maybe it's got something to do with the higher testosterone, and that could be a risk factor. But the most likely reason is that thickening of the endometrial lining. And so we can actually solve that through many other reasons, not just being on the pill. So if we can get you back ovulating, which we can do by addressing the reason why your what we call your PCOS drivers or root cause. You could also be on cyclical micronized progesterone, which is the bioidentical form of progesterone. Instead of it being a synthetic form, it's completely what your body would normally produce, and you take that to get your body back ovulating. So that's another way to do that. So while it's true that hormonal birth control can reduce the risk of endometrial cancer in people with PCOS. It's not the only way. There are other ways. We just have to get you back ovulating and then bring your insulin down as well, which if that is high, that's always going to be important for improving other PCOS symptoms too.
So there's some really good benefits, clearly, to taking hormonal birth control. But what are the downsides?
Yeah, so the downsides, firstly, we'll start with, because we're just finished on cancer, so we can start with cancer. As I said, the hormonal birth control is known to increase your risk of breast cancer. And the risk, it increases it by about 20 to 30%, which sounds quite a lot, but it's also due to, it depends on when you take it in your life as well. Like if you are taking it in your later 30s, which is when you're more likely to develop breast cancer anyway, then yes, that can be quite a significant increase. Whereas if you're taking it in your early 20s, then that's not as much of an increase. Now, the increased risk is with both the, they originally thought it was just the estrogen part of the combined pill, the ethinyl estradiol, but actually they've recently, I think it was Oxford University, have just came out with a some like an analysis saying, no, it's also those progestin only. So like the Mirena, the implant, the mini pill, they also increase your breast cancer risk by as much. So that's like 20 to 30%. So if you're taking it in your early 20s, the relative risk is probably about, so probably to the tune of about 8 people per 100,000, right? So not that many. But when you get into your later 30s, that looks more like 275 people per 100,000, right? So quite a lot more because we're combining it with that age factor.
Yeah.
So I think that, again, it's not like, oh my God, you know, you shouldn't take the pill because of this breast cancer risk. It's that maybe we just need to look at the other risk factors for you. And again, it's come back to all about your priorities. Like if you've got a strong genetic risk factor for breast cancer, so say you have the BRCA gene, then yeah, you might talk with your like health practitioner or understand a bit more, geneticist or something like that, and understand your risk and then go, actually, that's the cancer that I'm most likely at risk of, and therefore maybe that's not the right thing for me.
Mm.
So whereas someone that doesn't have any family history and they're in their early 20s, then you might say, well, actually, I'm more okay with that risk because it's also benefiting those other PCOS symptoms and it's reducing, you know, like I'm not getting a period at the moment and I need to figure out why, I need to figure out what works for me, but in the meantime, I'm going to take this and try and get that back. So I think that's important. But it, given that breast cancer is by far the most, one of the most common causes of cancer, it's about, in terms of the numbers, it's about 4 times more common than endometrial cancer. I think that it's like, you know, there's so much emphasis on you should take the pill for PCOS because it's going to reduce your risk of endometrial cancer. But then there's no kind of like counter to that of being like, yeah, but hold on, what about the breast cancer risk? And actually that's also really common, and maybe that's really common in my family. So you know, weighing those two up and looking at that as an actual risk to you as opposed to just, oh well. And especially if you're already ovulating, right? Like I've had a couple of practitioners say to me, because I'm not on hormonal birth control, and they've said, oh, why, you know, are you on anything? I said, no. And they said, well, you've got PCOS, so why not? And I'm just like, well, I'm ovulating.
Yeah.
I don't have, you know, many testosterone symptoms anymore. I get, like, I have actually had a few frequent acne outbreaks recently, but I think that's mostly due to finishing my daughter's yogurt off when she's not finishing it herself. So I kind of know that. But but generally, apart from that, I actually wouldn't be diagnosed with PCOS if I went to see a doctor today. Like, I don't have enough symptoms to meet the criteria. So in my case, it's like, why? You know, like, if it's not improving, like, I have regular ovulation, I don't have thickening of the endometrial lining, then why is that? And that, you know, and often the answer's been, well, to reduce your risk of endometrial cancer. And I'm just like, well, but how? Because I am ovulating, I am getting a regular bleed, I haven't got endometrial thickening. There's, you know, and so the answer to that is like, oh yeah, actually, you're right. But this is, so it's just about understanding why that is, and then you can probably have a bit more of a like educated conversation to say, well, actually, is that really true for me, or is this true for people with PCOS?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's probably one of the, in terms of the cancer side. Mm. So, but that's only like one part of the downsides of the pill. The others that we'll go into now is around mental health, like regularly ovulating, mate selection, which is really interesting. So like who you choose as a partner. Yeah, lots of those sorts of things. But is there anything that you've particularly heard of? Like when you said before that you know, like you'll see on Instagram and you'll be like, oh my God, is this the wrong thing for me? Is there anything that you've particularly heard of?
I mean, I guess it's more of just kind of like a natural thing, like letting your body do the natural thing. But I mean, in the past, I've been on a few different hormonal contraceptives and some that really didn't work for me. And one of the big things that stood out for me was mental health with some of them. I mean, luckily, the one that I'm currently on doesn't affect me really in that way. But I've been on some in the past where I've been a bit crazy.
Yeah. And that is something that women have complained about since the pill's inception in like the 1950s. And like really appallingly, it took until the last 5 years to actually get some data on that to validate that. And before then, women, it was just put down to like hysteria, which was this horrific female term in medicine that basically described anything that women were, that they couldn't kind of like prove through science. But yeah, so it's now been, there were some really good studies in the Nordics, I think it was Norway, where they followed women over many years and looked at, and it was a really massive cohort, so a really massive sample size of females, and they followed them for many years and or retrospectively looked at them, I can't remember which one it was, but saw that there was absolutely a significant increase in mental health issues when they went on hormonal birth control, right? That was like the, because a lot of people say, oh yeah, well, like, yes, it was, you know, was it birth control? Because it could have been something else. You could have changed job around the same time. It could have been something else. Like, but when you look at such a massive sample size, then it's irrefutable. It's like, well, I'm sure that like 17,000 women, or however many it was actually massive, did not change job all at the same time. Suddenly, like, this is the one common denominator that then led to that reduction in mental health. So that has now been, you know, been found to be very much the case. And while it isn't like the real quote unquote gold standard trials, where they do like a randomized control trial where they take like 2,000 women and they put one group on hormonal birth control and they put one group on a placebo and then track them for years and see what that looks like, that would be the gold standard. But it's also like, it's not really it's very hard to do, because you can't trick someone that they're on the pill, because it's like very obvious whether I can combine those pill packs or not. So yes, a lot of people say, well, that's not a randomized control trial, but actually they've done better than that by actually, I think, in my opinion anyway, by following so many women. They've kind of done a lot better job by actually making sure they get a really, really big sample size and seeing the general trends. So yeah, I think that's a big one. And as you said though, is that it's not necessarily, some people tend to react much worse to some than others, and potentially this comes down to your genetics and how your body actually processes those drugs, or the dosing on it. So for some people, they react really poorly to a much higher dose of the ethinoestradiol and the progesterone that's in the pill, and going on like more of a smaller dose one can be much more helpful for them.
Yeah, because it's interesting. I know someone who was on the same pill as me, and like I find it absolutely fine. And she was like, I had to come off it like within the month. So yeah, it's interesting. Like, can be so different for different people.
Yeah, definitely. And it doesn't seem to be as well. It can also be the progesterone only. Like, I had a really, like, probably my worst was that arm implant, like terrible, really bad. But also, in saying that, same with the copper IUD, which is non-hormonal, but I did get quite bad anxiety on that. And there is, that doesn't happen. A lot of people love the copper coil. It works really well for them. For me, it absolutely not. It was, and we think that that might be due to the ratio of copper and zinc in your body, and that that should be really tightly controlled. And if copper gets too high, it can lead to anxiety symptoms. Again, really hard to prove it, but thousands of women complaining about it when they have it. So again, it's like, yes, you can still have these symptoms, but it not be hormonal related. But it is now known to be one of the big things.
Yeah.
The other big thing that women have been complaining about for years when going on the pill is weight gain. And again, this has been something they've been told, no, that's in your head. There's no way that could do this because it's not increasing your calories. Like, you're making this up. It's just because you've got like lazy and started eating more. When in actual fact, that's not true at all. And we have some decent data now that shows that, especially, so the trial that they did was the progestin only ones. So they used the Depo-Provera injection, the arm implant, mm-hmm. and was it the IUD? Yeah, the IUD, the Mirena. Mm-hmm. And what they found was that the Depo-Provera injection was by far the worst. So this was actually a randomized controlled trial where they took a bunch of women and they put them randomly into these groups. The control was the copper coil, so they were still on a kind of a permanent form of birth control, but it was non-hormonal. And so they compared it to those groups, and they found that the Depo-Provera injection was by far the worst. It led to about a 5 kilo increase in about 6 months. I recently did a podcast on this, and so you can go back and listen to that. All the data will be in there, but we'll link this in the show notes here. But that is something that definitely can happen, especially with those progestin only. And again, because the progestin in them, the worst ones will be those ones that also increase the testosterone. Mm-hmm. So they'll probably make PCOS symptoms worse as well.
Mm. And with that as well, like the pill, does it cause cravings, or is that not proven?
Yeah, interesting. I don't actually know about the cravings. I haven't looked into that. Mm. But one thing, you can get different types of pills. So actually, you can get some pills that just give you the same amount of hormones in them throughout the whole month. Mm-hmm. They're called like single phasic. There is no phase. It's just the same amount. But you can also get biphasic, which tries to kind of mimic what your body will be producing at different times in your cycle. And then you can even get triphasic, which splits that down into even three phases. Mm-hmm. So I have heard of some people that are on those phasic ones getting kind of like PMS-y kind of symptoms, which doesn't make a huge amount of sense being on the pill when it's stopping your body from ovulating, and so you're not getting that kind of downfall in progesterone, which is what generally leads to PMS symptoms. But if it's a phasic one, then yeah, because they're just reducing the amount that's in that pill during that phase. So given that one of the common symptoms of PMS is cravings, maybe that could be the case and why you get those. But the other thing that could be happening is that the pill is also known to impact our blood sugar. So it actually makes us more insulin resistant.
Mm.
And if you've got PCOS, this can actually be quite bad in the long term. It make you, for many of us, we're already insulin resistant, so it can make that worse. And for many people that are insulin resistant, they that actually leads to cravings, because it's their blood sugar going up and down, and their body telling them your blood sugar's low, you need to go find food. That's actually what causes a lot of, especially like sugar or like carb cravings.
Mm, but is that just certain types of pills? Like, what is in it to make you kind of have those cravings?
Well, I don't think it's necessarily like what's in it, but it's like what's the effect of it. So if it's like, if it's causing your body to get insulin resistant, and then because of that your blood sugar goes through on this roller coaster, and you have these like high highs of blood sugar and low lows, when you get those low lows, that would cause the cravings. So that's the one thing I think of. There's nothing else that I know of that's in there that could otherwise be causing those cravings.
Okay. It's interesting. And then you also mentioned about the mate selection, which I read a bit into, and that seems kind of crazy. What's that about?
Yeah, so this is a really interesting one. So when we're talking mate selection, we're talking literally the partner that you choose. And that this has been shown in studies. They've done some recent research. I was actually just presenting on this on this exact kind of thing about like the pill's neither good nor bad, it just depends on your priorities, at a recent event, and I said about this, and that got the biggest gasp from the audience. They're like, what? Like, so what are you saying to me, that I could have like been on the pill and like met my life partner, my soulmate, and not realize because I was on the pill? But what it's saying is that you probably, like, you, it's actually been shown that some people choose a different kind of partner when they're on the pill than when they're not on the pill. So actually, you know, what this could mean is that you choose your partner when you're on the pill, and then when you're not on the pill, you actually don't find them as great a partner for you. So this is, yeah, it's really, really fascinating. We'll put the link into the study of the show notes. You can read through that if you are interested in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so interesting. And yeah, making me wonder now. I'm like, hmm. So I've like heard of other things such as like loss of libido with taking the pill. How come that happens?
Definitely the case that a lot of people do report a loss of libido. Again, it is often due to, like, libido is really, it's all about the hormones really drive that. And so we know that in a cycle where your body is leading up to ovulation, that is when you're going to have the highest libido, because this is your body's natural way of trying to help you get pregnant, right? If you want to have sex around the time that you're ovulating, you're more likely going to get pregnant. And that's really what our reproductive cycle is all about, is procreating. And so that is, if part of that is a surge of estrogen, and if you're on the pill, on hormonal birth control, you're not producing the estrogen. As I said at the start, those estrogen receptors are blocked, then you're not going to get that surge, and therefore you might have lower libido. But it's not the case for everybody. A lot of people don't notice it, but if you have, then that could be the cause, right? So if you've like gone on the pill, or you've been on the pill for so long and you have really low libido, you might not know, then that might be what you want to investigate, is the hormonal birth control actually contributing to this loss of libido. The other thing when it comes to sex that's also quite worrying is that the pill does shrink your clitoris by up to 20%. And, you know, given that in females that is such an important part of pleasure that women receive during sex, is that is actually a really quite worrying thing. If you've got shrinking, then you're going to have like much reduced blood supply to that area, which means that it's going to be a lot less sensitive, which means that potentially your potential for pleasure could be less. And very worryingly, I've heard that this is irreversible. So they're seeing this. So yeah, that's quite a worrying thing, especially for a lot of people that are struggling with sexual pleasure. Mm-hmm. That could be quite a thing for them to consider. And then the last thing, just before we wrap up, is a few of the other things just to check off. One of the downsides of the pill is nutrient deficiency. So it is known to leach a lot of like a few nutrients from your body. So again, this can be counteracted by taking a really good vitamins and stuff while you're on that, but just do know that that is going to happen. So if you're on that, especially if you've got PCOS and you're also taking metformin, which is known to leach B12 and folate from your body, then it might be a really good idea to, you know, take some really good quality supplements so you are getting what you need. Otherwise, you might just be feeling really tired. You might be noticing that, you know, your PCOS symptoms are getting worse because you don't have enough zinc, like lots of different things. So that's a slight worry.
And with like gut health and stuff as well, is the pill known to affect that in any way?
Yes. I don't have any stats in front of me about what that is, but it is known to be. And like, I don't actually know if the research definitely proves it now, but we're really seeing a very clear trend with young females going on hormonal birth control and developing IBS type symptoms at the same time or around the same time. So I see clinically, I don't know, I haven't actually looked recently whether they've come up with any like trials to look at this, but I have definitely seen a lot where clinically a lot of females where that completely lines up. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there is definitely a huge connection there. Absolutely.
Yeah, I've seen it with like some of my girlfriends as well, and we all kind of like connecting the dots, and my sister always says it as well. So yeah, I was just wondering
about that. Another thing too is that it can increase your cortisol, one of your stress hormones as well. So, and we definitely see this in like the research is known, you know, like if I think if you even look at the information that comes with your pill, it'll say there that it is known to increase cortisol. So if that's something you've already got really high stress hormones, then maybe again that's something that you want to. So all of these things, as you've seen, hopefully we've provided a pretty balanced like pros and cons about this. It really is about that, what is your priority at the moment, and knowing that it can be really helpful, but is really, if ever, the only choice. You know, you can achieve all of those things, like the positives, like the contraception, the reducing your ovarian and endometrial cancer risk, getting a regular bleed, acne, unwanted hair, the high testosterone. Those are all things that you can manage through other ways as well. The pill is definitely not the only choice, but it is also really good for those things, especially maybe while you're working on that underlying driver of your PCOS. Probably the two things that the one thing that you can't do is choose when you bleed. The only time you can do that is when you're on hormonal birth control, especially on the pill. So that's the one thing. The other parts, the downsides, the mental health, increased risk of breast cancer, getting a regular cycle, a lot of those things can't be avoided when you're on the pill. Like the mental health can be by trying different things generally, but a lot of people find that nothing really suits them. The increased risk of breast cancer, okay, well, we can just take the pill earlier in our 20s and then not do that later, and that might reduce that risk. Like getting a regular ovulation, a regular cycle, you cannot do that generally when you're on hormonal birth control. So that sort of stuff. And yeah, so a lot of the other things can be counteracted, but certainly getting a regular cycle and ovulating cannot be solved while you're on the pill. So there's definitely pros and cons. It just really depends on what your priority is and what you're looking to achieve.
Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.